told y'all that I always struggled with who I was and who I wanted to be. I didn't know. I came to this program truly not knowing who I was, right? I came to this program truly not knowing what I wanted to be, right? I still ain't real sure sometimes. I know, like, what my profession is, but I'm a boilermaker, right? I'm a construction worker. Is that who I am? I don't think so. I think that that's just what my job is. I'm a recovering addict. Is that who I am? I don't think so. That who I am is like, it goes deep down on the inside, and it's what the 12 steps has us do. After I admit that I can't get high and live, anytime I start getting high, my life gets screwed up. You guys give me another step to follow that up with. You guys tell me that, like, look, Marky, you need to come to believe. You need to reveal. You need to uncover something, right? If there is a power greater than me, a power greater than myself to restore me to sanity. Wait a minute. You mean I'm crazy, right? Well, look at, take a look. So take a look at the evidence. Look at some of the stuff you've done. What do you think it is? Yeah, I mean, in our literature, it says that, like, the most obvious form of insanity is the obsession to use. Well, something about obsession to me, look, this disease, obsession. Obsession is defined in the first step as the mental aspect of this disease. It's that sixth thought that takes me back time and time again to something, even though I know it's destroying me. How can you get so locked in that nothing else matters? I'm telling you, I don't know how I ended up here. It wasn't revealed to me that I had been clean for a little while how the hell I ended up at the side of the bed on December 10th for 1990. I told you I didn't come out just to be no addict. It started out real fun. Me and the guys in the neighborhood, we'd go behind the elementary school. We'd smoke some reefer. We'd laugh and lie all night long. It started out real, real fun, but that ain't the way it ended up. You know what I mean? It was like 20 years later. I started getting high at 13. I didn't stop till 33. It took 20 years to be revealed to me that I was killing myself. Why did it take me that long? I get real, real jealous. I see young folks come in this program. They was like, I started smoking crack. What is it? It's August. I started smoking crack in July. They hit a quit. I'd be like, God damn. Thank God for crack. It's bringing us to our knees. You know what I mean? Like, look, we're hitting bottom. And your bottom can be anywhere you want. It was never revealed to us. Nobody never told us. Nobody never said, hey, Mark, maybe you don't want to live like this. You know what I mean? There was a guy. When I started getting high, there was a guy I was getting high with. And I used to, like, he used to get real, real paranoid. He couldn't even hit himself, right? I used to hold the pipe and the torch. You know I was ripping him off big time. He never got a good hit. Look, but this guy told me when we started getting high, he says, if you keep this up, you're going to lose everything you got. Right? Not me, because I know what I'm doing. I ain't like you. You know, but sure and shit, he didn't lie. He never lied. You know, but it just took that long to be revealed to me. You know what I mean? They had to lose everything. I'm the guy that had to lose everything. Right? I had to lose the things. You talked about the things. I had to lose the two cars in the truck. I had to lose the clothes, right? I had to lose the jobs. I had to lose the jewelry. I had to lose the things, right? But that ain't the stuff that was important to me. After losing all that stuff, I still couldn't see. It still wasn't revealed. I had to lose the love of my family. Now, what's that worth to you? I had to lose my pride. You know what I mean? How hard do you work on that? I had to lose my self-esteem. You know, I had to lose the love that I had for them. Right? In some kind of way, it was through losing all of that stuff that it was revealed that maybe, just maybe, you got a problem. You know, and I came to this program real, real serious. I first tried to get clean in 1988. I was with a friend of mine this morning. He must have got up about 5:30. Right? We was walking around and we was talking. I first tried to get clean in 1988. I just told y'all my clean day is December 11th of 1990. Look, I'm an intellectual. I'm the guy that's too smart for his own damn good, right? There's something that's been revealed to me since I've been clean, right? Because the steps teach me how to live with me. What I'm really trying to uncover is who I am, and I'm really trying to, like, learn more about me, how I act, react, interact in different situations, right? I I read the basic text in 1988 from cover to cover. I thought I knew everything there was to know about recovery. Right? Just that little thing. Did you read these walls and down these halls and learn everything there is to know about recovery? You know what I mean? It was truly tough, and he was like beating the shit out of me. Because I thought I knew everything there was to know about recovery, but I didn't know how to stay clean. I didn't know how to stop and stay stopped. When we first got clean, we had a little crew called Stay Stop Crew. You know what I mean? Because we could stop, but we couldn't stay stopped for no period of time. I could stop when the money ran out. I could stop when you stopped feeding me. Right? I could stop. I'm the guy, I used to get high every other week for 6 years. I fund my whole paycheck every other week for 6 years. And that was the way I got high. I ain't got no blood and guts story. You know, I'm the guy that went to work every day, spun his whole paycheck, getting high. And I ended up on the side of the bed. I didn't know where to go, right? I didn't know that, like, there was this path that some people was taking. And as I was walking this morning, I must have been walking up there. I cut the other side of the swimming pool. I thought that was a tennis court last night when I came past it. The sun came up, more would be revealed, right? The path ain't always a straight and narrow. Sometimes to get where you're going, you have to like kind of like go off this way. Because as I was going to get up on top of that hill, I had to go that way, and I had to cut back like this, and that was actually the easiest way to get there. You know, we addicts, we always looking for the easiest way out, right? I ain't want to just go straight through. You know, and it's just what like happened in my life. But as I progress up the rough side of the mountain, and I come to believe in something, I come to believe in a power. Who, tell me what time it is, because we don't want to miss brunch. It starts at 10. Don't let me go down. We'll get us out here 5-2, we'll all be first in line. Look. Coming to believe in the power, and look, we weren't even talking about God yet. It was like when I take my hand and put it in yours together, we can do something that can't be done alone. And what happens is, on this path, there's people that's ahead of us. There's people that's behind us. They had already laid it out. This is the way to go. And for the life of me, I don't know why I was having such a hard time following a path that had already been laid out for me. Mm-hmm. It goes the path right there. Right across, you know what I mean? I'm an addict. I got to go my own way. And I'll start looking around and I'll start bumping my head. I end up in the sticker bushes. Because I don't want to follow the path. I don't want to believe what you guys are telling me. The second step, they were telling me, just show up, Mark. Based on open-mindedness, show up and trust what some people's telling you. Because everybody don't have our best interest at heart. But believe this, the majority of people in Narcotics Anonymous truly want to help you and truly want to see you do good. Sure, there might be one or two people that like want to see you relapse. You hold your breath and wait. I'm telling you, I used to stay clean on spite. I got an argument with a guy, I was like, motherfucker, you'll use before me. You can use twice on him. You know? And I don't know, something that was in me. You know what I mean? But based on open-mindedness, based on showing up to this program, sitting down, and we was taught to sit up front when we first came to this program. We talked about how like it used to be and the way they used to give it to us. You know what I mean? Come sit. I can remember, there's a woman that's like truly admired and respected in this program that's not with us no more. I remember the first time I went to hear her speak. My sponsor said, you go, you get 2 cups of coffee, you get 2 donuts, you sit your ass up front, and you don't move out of that seat.
That's right.
And it wasn't about getting up and down. Well, we was out of smoking meetings back then, so we didn't have to go outside to smoke.
Right.
You know what I mean? But it was about, like, sit down in the seat and can you just sit still for an hour and a half? If you could, I sat still, and it was revealed to me that there was a road. I didn't know there was a road right up there on the other side of that, you know what I mean? But if I just, and what it was telling me is that if I just sit still long enough, if I just sit still long enough to stop, you got to stop in order to know you can stop. And if I sit here and I sit in these meetings, I sit here long enough to realize, they said, don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. And the true miracle happened when the obsession to use left me. And I didn't even realize that when that was. It was somewhere between maybe 60 and 90 days. I looked back and I said, you know what? I ain't thought about using in a while. And then it was like truly a miracle. You know? And I didn't know that it was God working in my life. I'm telling you, look, God takes and he moves me from one place to the next and I don't have nothing to do with it. He done moved me from God as we understand him, the more will be revealed. He done moved me from the amphitheater to the grove in just this, I mean, not even a whole day yet. Praise God. 15 hours, you know what I mean? He done moved me around. So, God's working in my life. Look, when I needed him the most, I probably deserved him the least, and he helped me anyway. And it's third step stuff when we make a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understand him. Help me. I take myself, this is God's loving hands. I take myself and I put myself, and this is stuff that was revealed to me. I put myself right there in God's loving hands. What could happen to me from there? Nothing. Nothing. And it was something that they gave me. They said, look, Mark, take this. And they none of this stuff my own. You believe anything I say up here? It's something I done heard in this program. Something you guys done taught me. Something I done read in this literature. Something I done heard at some other convention somebody say. I ain't coined no phrases around here. None of this stuff is my own. It's what I learned in this program. Right? They said, take this and use it as ammunition. Ain't nothing can happen to me today that God and I can't handle. And that's third step stuff, and that's the way I live. I step out, when I look, there's this movie called The Abyss, where the guy goes real far down, you know what I mean, he falls, and it's like impossible, they just knew he was dead, they wrote him off, you know what I mean, and they said something serious is happening down there, and he comes back up and saves everybody. When I look into the abyss, and I don't know what's out there, and I know I want to step out and live my life, but I'm afraid to take that step, because I don't know what's there, right? My faith in God. And my third step has me take that step knowing that when I take that step, either I'm going to be standing on solid ground or God's going to teach me how to fly. And I believe that in my heart. And my God is just like, you was powerful this morning, man. I was like, God damn. Like, I don't know how it's like you said, he makes it work. It ain't us. It ain't me. You know what I mean? I believe that God keeps me clean. And the third step, it says that like, sometimes God can be whatever force it is that keeps us clean. So I took that and I ran with it. I said, God keeps me clean. Well, if I believe God keeps me clean, I ain't got no damn business using. And that's the way I live my life. And I step out and I live my life. But the more will be revealed, right, recovery really truly starts happening when you get into them later steps. Right? The more will be revealed is like in the fourth step, we made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Now I'm talking about revealing some stuff about me to me. Not to you. I mean, I wrote a fourth step, ain't nobody read it. Nobody. I wrote my first fourth step, and I wrote a couple fourth steps since I've been here. My first fourth step, I wrote it. I put it in this little yellow envelope. I'm going to my sponsor to do my fifth with it. And then I showed up in his living room. I put it on the table. He said, what's that? I said, that's my fourth step. You know what I mean? He says, hey, that's for you. That stuff is for you. So the searching and fearless moral inventory. Searching meant finding. The fearless meant facing. And the moral meant the truth. So what it was telling me to do was find and face the truth. About who? About me. And it was up to me to do the work. I had to find and face the truth about me because you couldn't do it for me. And it's more will be revealed. More was being revealed to me about me and who I am and where I come from and why I do things that I do. And why I do the things that I do was my fifth step. It was the exact natures of my wrongs. Admit to God, yourself, and another human being. Now I had to tell somebody. I didn't have to tell everybody, but I had to tell somebody, you know what? I'm a real self-centered son of a bitch. And I had to tell somebody that because sometimes it's just sharing. I was talking with somebody, I can't even remember. I talked to so many people in just a short period of time I've been up here. I was talking with someone, we was just talking about sometimes it's the honest sharing. Wow! It's just the honest sharing. That's what I said it to, right? Sometimes it's just me saying it. I don't want no answer. I don't want you to have the solution to my problem. Sometimes I just need to say, like, this is what's happening in my life. I just need to reveal. I need to uncover. I need. This is what's happening. Hey, what I'm gonna do? Right? I'm gonna move on. I'm gonna move forward because usually what's happening in my life is connected to some part of my character. Right? Well, my character is who I am. In the sixth step, he talks about becoming entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. What happens in six is like character defects really start to become revealed. That's where you really start getting slapped in the face with stuff that you know when you're doing wrong. And you, because look, once you know, and we know that you know, and it's been revealed that like losing ain't right. Now that everybody sitting here know that like we shouldn't be getting high, right? Once you know, and we know that you know, you can't cop out to not knowing no more, because it done been revealed. Sure, when I was using it, and I went from 13 to 33, really not knowing, and I really didn't know. Nobody never said, hey, Mark, maybe you need to take a look at this. It wasn't revealed to me. But once it was revealed, now who's to blame? I mean, it's my own fault. But the defects is what makes my character defective, is that I can't find no balance with nothing. And sometimes it ain't always like, I make stuff life or death. And maybe that was good when it came to using, because I don't look at it like getting high and not getting high no more. I make it life or death situations. If I get high, I might as well go take myself out. I don't want to live like that no more. But on the other hand, that's maybe a little extreme if it really comes to that. Maybe I'm a little bit of a coward to really take myself out of the game. You know? So, I just become ready. I invite God in. Six steps, I need God. Because I can't get rid of this stuff by myself. It's too deeply rooted in me. I've been practicing this way of life for 20 years. What, you think I'm going to change overnight? And that's why the steps is written in order. Like, if God revealed everything to me about me when I first got clean, I wouldn't have made it. I would have had to use. I heard you say this morning, it was the only way, it was my only out was to use again. I had to use again to deal with the feelings. I had to use again to deal with the pain. When I went back to that way of life, the only way I could get through it and live through it was to use. Because if I didn't, I would have took a damn bridge. A whole lot of bridges down in Pittsburgh to take. They just built some new ones, those Joe Montana bridges up on 43. That suckers is real high. You ain't standing a chance for one of them. But look. There is another way out. That way is through God. And it's through the seventh step where I humbly ask, I need to go to God and humbly ask him, God help. I don't like living like this. God help. I don't want to argue with my kid's mother. God help. I don't want to cheat on my job. God help. My son's in trouble. Right? This is my biggest struggle right now. Next, on the 30th, I got to go to court with my son. My son got charges. Conspiracy, armed robbery, attempted homicide. Right? It's our intention to go down there and lie. All right, I'm struggling with this on the inside. I don't even have to lie. He do. But I'm struggling with, as we sit in the lawyer's office, and the lawyer said, well, what's going to be our story? And we're going to say that he wasn't there, right? And first thing that comes out of my mouth is that we all know that that's a lie, right? And we're sitting in the lawyer's office. His aunt is like, would you shut the fuck up? I'm struggling with telling the truth. Right. It ain't don't sit real well with me. Right. You know, and the little boy that told the truth, because there was four of them, got into this little situation, and everybody shut up, everybody gets off. Well, one little boy decided he was going to tell the truth. This is what happened. Well, everybody's calling him. I'm the only one thinking, and like, wow, that had to take a whole lot. Mm-hmm. It had to take a whole lot to say, I'm going to tell the truth. Now, maybe he's trying to save his own ass, right? I really want to save my son at the expense of the other three boys if I have to. Right? But all I got to do, all I know, all I have today is the God of my understanding. God, help me with this one. I'm giving this one to you. I'm going to get through this. Because look, he's working everywhere else in my life. Right? And it's my kids is the extreme. I got one getting ready to go to jail. I got one just start college at Duquesne University. Total extremes. 1 year apart. You know what I mean? Don't ask me. I've been clean 12 years. They told me you need to talk to him about getting high. I've been clean 12 years. If that ain't enough damn talking, I don't know what else to say. You know, but I invite God in. I humbly ask God. And look, humbly ain't no physical posture. Sure, sometimes it's getting on your knees, oh, Heavenly Father, we invite you in, and we ask for this, and we ask for that. But really, humbly, it's like what's in your heart. It's what's in my heart. You know what I mean? The God of my understanding lives in me. That was revealed to me. I didn't know that's where he was. That's why I always searched outside of myself for people, places, and things to make me okay. I never knew. It's on the little chalkboard up here about happiness. Happiness is not having what you want. Happiness is wanting what you have. Happiness is on the inside. There's three demons. Story time. What time is it? Okay. Story time. Three demons, they had happiness. Okay? Right? These three demons had happiness. Right? So they decide they want to have happiness from man. Because they don't want us to be happy for real, for real. He don't want us. As long as he can keep us miserable, he can keep us out here. Right? So, the one demon says, okay, we'll take happiness. We'll hide it down the bottom of the ocean. Man, we'll never find it down there. And they got together and they had a little group conscience. They said, well, you know that man. You know what I mean? He'll be swimming down there and he might just swim up on happiness. They says, okay, we won't do that. We'll take happiness. We'll hide it at the highest mountain up under a rock or something. Right? And they got together, another little group conscious. Oh, what do you think about this? I don't know about that man. You know, he might be up there mountain climbing and just trip over happiness. You know? And then the third demon, he was like the head guy. He was the guy that's like me, too smart for his own damn good. He says, I know, I got it. We'll take happiness. We'll hide it in the heart of man. He'll never look for it again. Never dawned on me to look on the inside. It was like my true happiness lies inside of me. It ain't the like things. Yeah, I mean, it ain't the woman. It ain't where it's at. It just ain't where it's at. I'm learning to go to God in all situations, right? And I look, you need to know this about me. I ain't the guy to go there right away. I'm still the guy to do everything I can humanly possible to make my life go my way. And then when stuff really, really starts getting out of hand, I back up and I reach out, oh God, please help me with this one, right? And it never fails that he comes through. He ain't never late. He's always on time. Last week, my daughter just started school Wednesday. She moved in. Last week, I was crying. I went to speak somewhere. Where did I go speak? We went to speak at Williamsport. I was in a meeting with four people. Four people. This is how God works. I'm in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. Four people in a meeting. I start crying about how I need $12,000 to send my daughter to college. Well, as soon as I get done crying, the woman stands up. She says, Mark, it's my job to find grant money for people. She's from New York. They either brought me from Pittsburgh, her from New York, brought us together in a room with four people. She says, here, take my number, call me. I'm going to put a package together to get grant money for your daughter. My daughter starts on Wednesday, Friday's last week, $15,000 got approved for her to go to school. She moved in Wednesday. I don't know what she thinks she's going to do with that other $3,000. I try to tell her, you better stay up for next semester or we'll be calling New York again. Right? I don't know. But it's like the way my life is going, and it's like revealed that like God is truly working. God is truly working in my life, and that's why I can say that like he's helped me without my cooperation. Yeah, I mean, I just ain't the guy to believe that you just got to have all this faith in order for God to help you. God damn it, I sit on the side of the bed December 10th of 1990 and I cried. And out of nowhere, something said, call a rehab. But I was like, where'd that come from? Call rehab? Where did we get that thought from? I mean, that was God planting that stuff. And look, he was planting seeds. And more would be revealed. It's like we could plant seeds, but you got to plant them in fertile ground. You know what I mean? And what happens is when you plant a seed, it begins to grow and you really can't see it happening. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But you got to keep watering it. Mm-hmm. You got to keep giving it sun and ain't nothing come up through the dirt yet. But when that one little green little sprout comes up through that dirt, you be like, whew. You feel really, really good. They're like, damn, I'm growing a plant. You know? Mm-hmm. And I done killed like $100 worth of flowers this summer. Hanging them all on my balcony, not watering them. Because it's important to nurture. And it's like our recovery. It's important to nurture our recovery. It's important to stay on the right path and to continue through the steps. The steps revealed to me who I hurt in my life. The eighth step revealed to me that, like, you know what, there's people that you need in your life. There's people that's in your life that ain't in your life that you really need in your life. And it's because of the damage that you've done. And it's like damage control. Made a list of all the people that we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Y'all said that everybody we came in contact with was at risk. Right? And it wasn't so much the people out in the streets that I cared about. It was my sisters. You know what I mean? I was sharing how, like, I couldn't go to my sister's house for nothing. But I had stole something from my sister's house. So I was real uncomfortable about going there. And until I made the recommends to her, until I went to her and said, look, do you forgive me? This is what happened. You want to know how that came up missing? This is what happened. Yeah, you know what I mean? Until I made the attempt to try to replace that, try to fix that situation, to try to get our love back together. I can remember when I was in rehab and it hurt me to my heart. Me and my sister didn't speak for a year and a half. My sister didn't speak to me for a year and a half, right? I didn't speak to her for a year and a half. I'd have told you how I was with Spike, right? She got pregnant and named her son after me. I was like, damn. You know what I mean? She really, really loved me. And I can remember when I went to rehab, she was the one that called me. She was the one that called me and said, I love you. You know what I mean? And when I called, I said, look, the people are going to take me in this rehab. I don't know where to get you. She said, don't move. I'll be right there to get you. I'm talking about after we had hated each other. And them's the people that I really need to rebuild these bridges to, because I love them and they love me. And here I am, they're not part of my life because of the shit that I've done in the past. Well, I'm not living like that no more. I want to rebuild. I got a daughter. She's 25 now. I don't even get to see her. From the age of 2 to the age of 18, I didn't get to see her. It was this other guy that I couldn't stand. He was a using addict. But he knew I was in this program. He says, I know your daughter. I says, oh, yeah, she was 18. I must have been about 8 years clean. It was about 7 years clean, something like that. I was about 7 years clean. He hooked me up with my daughter that I hadn't seen. I hadn't seen her for years. It was 12 years I hadn't seen her. And it was a using addict that put us together. And my admins to her was that, I know I hadn't been there. I know I wasn't a father to you. I know I wasn't a daddy. But if you need a father today, you got one. And it worked well for a couple years. You know what I mean? In some kind of way, we just start drifting apart again. Now, she hasn't called me in years. Admins ain't always up to me. I do my part, right? Mm-hmm. And these teenagers today, we got to be careful how we speak to these teenagers today. You know? They ain't taking it. You know? But the steps, and then we move on, and we continue to take personal inventory so we can, continue to see where we are. What happened with me is I'll get back in the corner, I can't come out clean. I'm still human. A day at a time, I still do things, and I still cause situations in my life that are destructive to me. That's just who I am. Don't believe because I'm up here, I'm this spiritual guy that with 11 years clean and don't do nothing. You know what I mean? I'm telling you, I'm human. I'm just another recovering addict trying to stay clean a day at a time. I still got to go on my job on a construction site and deal with these guys. The way I interact with them, man, all the time, the guy I talked about last night is when you get with a bunch of guys, sometimes when I get on a construction site, they call me Mo. If you call me Mark, I know you know me from the program. If you call me Mo, I know you know me from my job or the street somewhere, right? But I continue to look at myself so I can, see where I'm at and how I'm headed. And when we were wrong, promptly admitted, it's the hardest thing in the world to say I was wrong. I'd rather say you was right. Okay, you was right, yeah, but it just don't feel good in here, right? And we move on. And more things, the longer further I progress up the rough side of the mountain through the 12 steps, and I'm on this path, the more it's revealed to me that, you know what? When that freedom is almost attainable. It's right here. God is right here, sitting, just waiting for me at the top of the rough side of the mountain. Come on, my child. I've been waiting for you. Come this way. And we seek through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God. Prayer is voicing my concerns to God. Prayer is real, real powerful. To help. Simple as prayer. Help. Would you help me, please? Right? And when prayers go up, blessings come down. The meditation part is real hard for me because my mind is just, I'm still so crazy some of the time. It's hard to quiet my mind. This morning was like beautiful thing, 5 o'clock in the morning, thinking I was the only one up. Well, nobody else outside. I didn't see nobody else outside, that's for sure, but I was able to sit down and it was just like all you could hear is sounds from nature. And it was like beautiful. You know, and I found a little peace, I found a comfort zone that I wanted to stay in, but I can't go. So I need to come out of that comfort zone. The guy last night talked about taking a risk. He said, love is taking a risk. If I don't take a risk, I can't grow. I can't move forward in my life. Each step is a risk, and I might trip and fall. Right? But if I fall down flat on my face, if I can look up, I can get up. Right? And that's what I do. And when, as soon as I look up and I see I can get up, I get up. And I come out here and I walk this way of life. And I try the best I can to carry this message to all that will receive it. You can't give it. I mean, everybody don't want it. If you don't want it, it's okay. We still love you. Keep coming back. Mm-hmm. Right? But if you want this program, if you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, the 12 steps is about how you're living. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to addicts and practice these principles in all our affairs. Right? How you living? Mm-hmm. Can you sleep at night? I'm doing pretty damn good, I think. No, I ain't like who I want to be, but I'm not who I used to be. Right? And God is like truly working. He's revealing stuff to me little by little. Each and every day, something new is revealed about me, where I'm at in my life, who I am, and not only who I am, who I could be. I'm almost that guy. My father died May 18th. May 19th. My mother's birthday is in May 19th. My father died one day before my mother's birthday last year. My father died May the 18th. My father had a chance to see me clean for 10 years. Now, I told y'all my other two brothers are dead. One of my brothers been dead for 25 years. The other been dead for 15 years. I was real selfish about that when my father died. I was like, well, why did my father die? Somebody said, well, maybe he died to go be with your brothers. I said, oh, well, my brother ain't seen him in 25 years. So now maybe my brother gets a chance to see his father. But what he used to say to me, how proud he was of me. He used to say, I'm proud of you. You know, and he was sitting in the jitney station. He was a number man, old guy. You know the old guys, they sit around the jitney station. They talk shit, smoke reefer. I go past to visit. You know what I mean? I go past to see my father, and he will make him so proud around his friends that his son is doing good. Because that's what we do as parents. We talk about our children. Y'all just heard me stand up and talk about my children, right? In November, we'll be talking. I'll be a granddad for the first time in November. I was telling Phil. I told you I've been talking to so many people, I can't remember who I told what to. Right? But I know in my heart that I'm almost the man that he wants me to be. I know he looks down on me. Him and God is up there looking down on me, and they're probably sitting up here sometimes saying, will you look at this damn fool? We better help him anyway. Y'all said God takes care of babies and fools. Right? I told y'all I'm 45. I ain't fit in the baby category no more. I mean, but they're revealing to me like this is the path. The path is the 12 steps and the 12 conditions of Narcotics Anonymous. The path is getting in this program and staying in this program. Right? More will be revealed about ourselves and who we are. And it's a great freedom to know who I am today. I'm not that guy that I thought I was, nor do I want to be. I'm real okay just being me and who I am. And that's the freedom that I've achieved in this program. The freedom I've achieved in this program is freedom to be me. Mark Moultrie, simple guy, 45, right? Five kids, divorced, simple little apartment, decent little job, addict. Never forget where I come from. Never forget where I come from. And I just love this program. The most important thing is that you don't get high. A day at a time, the only thing I'm going to get right is I ain't going to get high. You can count on it. That's what integrity is about. Integrity is and it ain't always that, like, the courage to do this stuff ain't always like that roaring voice. You know what I mean? Sometimes it's that, like, when you get to the end of the day, you say, I'll try again tomorrow. I'm doing pretty damn good in this program. I'm learning to love myself. And I'm going to say this. I'm going to shut up because it's almost 10 o'clock. I said 5:02. I was going to quit so we could all go to brunch. One more story. All right. Two little guys. They was the baddest little guys in town, little country town. These two little boys, they was bad little boys. One was 8, one was 10. My friend told me this story. Right? Every time something came up missing, they knew these little boys had took it. Anytime something happened, had to be these little guys that did it, right? So the parents get this bright idea. They're going to take these two little boys to the pastor. He's going to heal them. We're going to take them to the preacher. He's going to heal them. They take these two little boys. So they go in one morning, they go get the little one. They take him down to the church, right? They take him in the church. The pastor gets him in this little back room, right? He shuts the door, and he asks this little boy, "Where is God?" And the little boy's sitting there, and he don't know what to do. And the pastor raises his voice a little higher at him, "Where is God?" And the boy gets real scared, so the pastor yells at him, "Where is God?" And the boy jumps up, and he runs, and he slams the door behind him, and he runs all the way home, and he gets in the house, he slams the door, and he runs up to his room, slams that door, and he gets in the closet, and he slams that door. His little buddy comes over to visit him, right? His little buddy wants to find out what happened. His little buddy opens up, gets up in his room, he opens up the door. He says, "Well, what did they do to you?" He said, "Man, we're in big trouble now. God's missing, and they think we stole him." Thank you for the